Hey, everyone. 372 pages we'll never get back. This is Michael J. Nelson. This is a podcast where we talk about bad books, and boy, what a doozy do we have for you now. Connor, explain this whole thing.
This whole thing that we got going on here is we read bad books, and people read them along with us, and we talk about how the sentences are dumb, and we compare them to the other bad books we've read, and we move along in the spirit of just sort of endurance and but with good humor as we truck through this one. We hit the halfway mark of Midnight Sun.
Through this one?
As we truck through, good buddy. Yeah, we've got our cooler of knickknacks and our menus with tales of the Old West.
Wow, that was a great description. You sizzled it.
That was that's what I if I ever get on an elevator with Les Moonves, that's going to be my how I get him to give us $1 million to do this.
Is that your gold standard of getting on an elevator with someone?
Right, he's a guy, right? He's he can make things happen.
Oh yeah,
make that podcast, baby.
I love it. He's got a cigar, I assume.
Well, yeah, he's got his own smoking elevator that I stumbled into. I was disguised as a janitor pushing a cart to get in there, and I said, Les Moonves, and he said, security, and I said, no, hear me out, and he said, all right, I'll allow it.
Oh, I pictured you underneath the room service table, but that'll do.
Okay. Well, yeah, so bad books, and Midnight Sun by Stephanie Meyer of Twilight fame definitely qualifies.
Holy moly. Can I tell you what I told you off air? Because you said this was echoed by other people.
Yeah, I wasn't listening, so I just go ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah. By the way, Connor is doing real or fanfic today. So speaking of departments, that's going to be very exciting.
Very exciting.
It's really it's fun to prepare them, realizing that for once you'll have to squirm. That was very fun to put them together. So I'm looking forward to that. But no, what I did, I made a tragic mistake in my reading assignment because I just split it up into 2 days. Very busy week. Connor and I work over at Riff Tracks. We had a lot of things going on, and so I was very busy, and I had to sort of poke these readings in the cracks that I had available. And you just don't do that with a Stephanie Meyer book.
Mm.
And I said, two and two, right? I'll read the first two chapters I have to read, and then I'll read the second two. First two went fairly easily. Third one, like, all right, I'm making my way. Got another half hour, 45 minutes. No! Mother of God. this last chapter, my wife was in the other room, and she heard me. The grumbling got louder and louder, and she was sitting there with like a tray and reading and taking notes, and then got up and was like, what in the world is wrong? It's going on and on and on.
No other medium does that to you. You don't, you don't sit down to watch a episode of the Great British Baking Show and like, oh, that clocked in at 21 minutes, great, and then the next one is 2.5 hours. It's the length of the
right.
Irishman. It's
right. So anyway, that's what we have to look forward to. But
I love how Bridget and Lauren in our universe are always like sitting in the other room, sort of like, you know, just swirling a chalice of brandy and sort of like contemplating, you know, life and looking back on, you know, the fond memories, or you know, calling an old family member just to reminisce about happier times every time that we're in the other room shouting profanities about what we're reading.
Right, and then their only other thing is to disapprove of us reading passages out loud.
Yes, exactly.
Their characters in our podcast are not deeply rich.
Yes, they are. They are essentially a wife from a daily newspaper comic strip.
Yes, in real life, of course, they are actual human beings. But I don't know. Should we just dive in here?
Yeah, I think that we might as well. I feel like, you know, as we've said, it gets backloaded since half of this week's reading assignment was the final chapter. But yeah, we do have dumb sentences. We have people who emailed in. A couple a surprising theme emerged, and then we have I'm going to do real or fanfic. So yeah, let's start with chapter 14, Closer.
Yeah, and I don't know that we need to do a lot of. I guess we just met Jacob.
Yeah, she parcels out the Jacob to us in that the last chapter. We were unsure whether he knew he was a werewolf, but he was admiring Edward's Volvo. And you know, we're halfway through this book, and that's pretty much his character, because he does not appear in this last segment that we just read.
No, it's four chapters. There's no Jacob. but we were promised sparkling in... When were we first promised sparkling?
The first time the sun came out and he had to skip school, I think. So, yeah, it's been building to that as well.
Yeah, so that's a big moment, and that's going to come up in this reading.
Yeah.
But not yet. This is chapter 14. It's closer, I think, although when I read it, I really hoped it was closer.
Uh-huh.
And this was the chapter where Mike Newton becomes like a Glengarry, Glen Ross salesman, and he finally gets to drink coffee. And
Tyler Crowley's begging him for the good leads.
That's right. So, closer, right. This is chapter 14.
It starts off with this sentence. Just setting the stage, it was peaceful in Bella's room tonight. Even the fitful rain, which usually made her uneasy, did not disturb her. Despite the pain, I was peaceful too, calmer than I'd been in my own home with my mother's arms around me. So just setting the stage, he's broken into a teenage girl's room again to watch her sleep while comparing it to his mother draping her arms around him in his own home.
Yes, this cutting to him watching Bella sleep is kind of like, Titanic, like cutting to the coal room, you know, everyone shoveling. It's just that quick shot of like, just to establish there's an energy driving this thing forward. So sitting in Bella's room in the rocking chair in the corner with the light off, right?
I thought of it more of like a, you know, Three's Company or A-Team gag of just being like, no way, no way, I'm not going in there. I am not going in. Like smash cut to him in the bedroom. Okay, I went back to watch her sleep again. Yep. But like at this point in time, you know, essentially all he does is sleep except for that one time that he needed to hide, and he did so by moving to a shadow. But like... Well, 1%, single digit percent odds that he hasn't just accidentally, you know, opened a drawer and like, oh no, that's her underwear drawer. Oh, yes. What? I thought it was going to be a Linkin Park CD in there. Oh, maybe they're buried underneath the underwear. Nope, just more underwear.
I better close it, but I don't want to make any noise. I'll close it very slowly. Let me pack it back down here. Yeah.
But yeah, no, he just appears to go there and like to listen to her sleep talk his name.
But quickly, they get past the credit to her. She doesn't go deep dive into the sleep-watching. She gets up and has breakfast. And this is where I blow the whistle on the whole book. Everything else is more believable than this. Vampires exist? Sure.
Okay, yeah,
I'll take that.
Ancient folklore, yeah.
Yep. Werewolves.
Kids impressed by Volvos, absolutely.
Yep. Sure. Mike Newton's coming out your ears. I'm fine with that. Here's where I call. Here's where I blow the whistle. Tell me more about your mother. It was one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, my God.
Because it was obviously one of hers. And that's, come on, just the loud coach's whistle.
Blow the whistle like the Matrix fades in the background, like the graph, you know, it just fades to the green text and wireframe. All right, you know, that simulation, it was going well up till then, but too unrealistic.
Wow. And do you think is that the moment that, you know, young girls are like, oh, my God, the dreamiest man who has ever lived?
Right.
Tell me more about your mother.
Well, she had an interesting response to that, too. She says, my mom is kind of wild, I guess. Not like a tiger is wild, like a sparrow, like a deer. So off the rails sort of already. She just doesn't do well in cages. My gran, who was totally normal, by the way, wasn't questioning that, but she had no idea where my mom came from and used to call her a will-o'-the-wisp. So a lot to unpack there, but I focused mainly on her grandmother had no idea where her mom came from. She was just, deposited on her doorstep with a note that said, you know, please look after this will-o'-the-wisp sparrow baby.
I did not notice that. She didn't know.
I
was thrown by the earlier things. I was going to put it as a sonic challenge to you, but I'll just, because I have it here, there's question marks throughout that thing that you just read. So I'll try to read it like it's read or like it's printed by her. And just remember, this is this ancient creature came through time to become obsessed with this person who says,
got it.
Okay, my mom is kind of wild, I guess. No, like a tiger's wild, like a sparrow, like a deer. She just doesn't do well in cages. So that's who yes, he's just the, like his eyes, just deep pools of admiration for this young girl.
Right. He's, you know, he pushes out the memory of the loss of humanity caused by the atom bomb dropping when he was 45. You know, the horrors of the unrest of the 60s. And he listens to her up talk questions about sparrows.
Right.
he has regrets about, you know, not intervening in the Great Leap Forward in China to protect people, but you know, sure. Will o' the Wisp is what your grandmother used to call your mom. Lovely.
The mom that just showed up one day. I wonder at how old.
That's a very good question, because it would speak differently of her grandmother if she, you know, took in a 16-year-old, or if she did just sort of like look after a baby in a bassinet.
Yeah, interesting.
But then, you know, so he then, you know, he's asked about her mom, so he's lowered the bar already. But then he just starts asking about her first dates. This is what he's curious to learn about. And she says her first date, I guess that would be Mike. A different Mike, she said quickly when my expression changed. So she said, just hearing the name Mike, he starts to glare at her, I guess.
That threw me. It's like, what? Come on. What is this for? Just make it a different person.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But she, so his expression changes. He was my square dancing partner in the sixth grade. I was invited to his birthday party. It was a movie. She smiled. The second Mighty Ducks. I was the only one who showed up. Later, people said it was a date. I don't know who started that rumor. So, like, again, more to unpack there, but more than anything, just the Mighty Ducks is Twilight canon now.
The second Mighty Ducks.
Yeah. D2.
Right. We had Nick Nolte in Lorenzo's Oil. We have the music has been much discussed, but movie-wise, this is pretty good stuff.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now, but the Twilight Wiki does not appear to have a page for Mighty Ducks, so we might need to get the Jackals on there, because that is canon, baby. That is indisputable.
That's right.
I mean, it's not on the wiki, but in my searches, I did determine that it is sort of people sort of took a fancy to that moment on the dark web.
Oh, people. The same people who do the other recreations, or is this a new group?
Because different faction, because there's like the people who adhere only to the wiki and that, you know, like the strict interpretation. And then there's the people who are more of the founder's intent, essentially. And so they're the ones who interpret these things that are not, you know, sort of more common Twilight things. So
and
that's
then I wonder, are there like D2 fans who that's how they're drawn into the Twilight universe?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they D2 fans are obviously going to be wary of the Twihards, just like sort of like the vampires and werewolves are. But when they do collaborate, as I believe they did on this thing that I tracked down, because it is very, it's very accurate. It has things that you wouldn't know about D2 unless you had studied the movie or cursorily perused its Wikipedia page.
Sure, sure. Okay. Well, interesting. Are we going to listen to it? Or are you put a link down in the...
Yeah, I'll put a link to it. No, we're going to listen to it. Let's queue up this segment. So this is a recreation of Bella's date with Mike. Not Mike Newton.
It's Mike Newton, right?
No, it's not Mike.
Oh, you just said not Mike Newton.
You could not see it, but my expression changed there. But yeah, so this is Bella going to the theater, talking to the other Mike during their first date, as some called it.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Hey, Bill.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, Bella. I can't believe she showed up. Oh, play it cool, Bill. Grab a seat. Looks like you've got plenty of choices. Oh, yeah, huh? Am I early, or...?
Early. Oh, my dear. The only thing you've arrived early for is the theft of my heart. Oh, no, not at all. Everyone else must have hit traffic.
Oh, well. Guess I'll just sit next to you, then. Want a goober?
Of all the candies at the snack bar, you picked goobers? What the hell? I mean, of course. Thank you, Bella.
Happy birthday, Bill. Oh, looks like it's starting.
This is it, Bill. You've fantasized about this moment during so many square dances, and now you finally pulled it off. Oh, boy, D2, here we go.
Now, I haven't seen the first one, so I hope I can follow this.
Right. Well, I'll help you out if it gets too confusing.
Okay, now, who's that?
Gordon Bombay? He was a great player, but he got hurt before he could make the NHL, so now he coaches kids hockey.
Huh, got it. And who's that?
That's Charlie. He's the captain.
I see. Okay, why are they skating like that?
That's a flying V. It's their secret play.
Okay. And who are those guys?
That's the team from Iceland. And they weren't in the first one. You just haven't been paying attention.
I have too, but Iceland?
They're the bad guys.
No, I mean in general.
It's a European island country known for volcanoes, waterfalls, and Bjork.
Ah. Okay, why is the hockey ball moving like that?
It's called a puck, and that's Russ's special move, the knuckle puck.
Got it. Well, actually, one more question.
Knuckles are finger joints allowing for bending and flexing.
Okay. Goober?
No, I already said I didn't want to...
No. What are they?
You're actively eating them! There are flecks of goober stuck to your lip at this moment.
Uh-huh.
They're peanuts coated in chocolate. They're a poor man's M&M.
I see. Huh.
What is wrong with you?
I'm sorry, Bill. I guess I'm just kind of a klutz.
You're a klutz? And so that means you can't follow the plot of a children's movie or know what Iceland is?
Did you want a goober or nah?
No!
So when does the dog start playing basketball?
Okay, that's it. I'm leaving, Bella. I can't believe I do-si-do'd with you. Happy f***ing birthday to me.
Okay, bye. This wasn't a date, by the way. Oh, wait. Gordon Bombay. I do know that guy. His uncle was in Roller Gator. Ugh. Why did I pick goobers?
Wow, it is. You're right. It's accurate.
Yeah, it's very accurate. I think that you would be... hard-pressed as a Mighty Ducks fan to dispute any of the points that are in there.
I liked the collaboration. We haven't had that kind of cooperation between warring factions before, but it's dynamite.
The dark web isn't all drugs and illicit sex stuff. There's partnerships on it too.
Sure.
There's community building.
Yeah. I just want to go back for one second because after she said that stuff about... my mom is kind of wild, I guess. Not like Tiger. he said, immediately following her saying that crap, he said, "I nodded thoughtfully, sifting through this mine of information." So again, the 109-year-old guy listens to a 16-year-old babble and then strokes his chin and puffs at his meerschaum.
Yes. Yeah, maybe in the sense that, like, you know, you can sift through your cat box as a, you know, mining for, cat turds. So, he does fill us in on her second date as well, because that does that, you know, as we heard that first one, that sounded like more of a setup, you know, more of entrapment than an actual date. But the second one also was ice skating themed, which is a weird, you know, sort of unforced error on the author's part. She went ice skating in a group. I forget what the guy's name. I think we got the whole name to avoid confusion. But she figured out pretty quickly that ice skating was a bad idea. My injuries were minor, but the plus side was that I got to sit by the snack bar and read for the rest of the night. And so once again, Edward is charmed and intrigued by that being her preferred way to spend an evening.
And what a dynamite date that turned out to be, huh?
Yeah, that's a. But both of these guys must have been, sort of taken offense to her either, asking questions throughout the whole movie or just, bringing it. The fact that she brought a book in the first place is it's insulting, I think.
I will point out there's a couple places where the book now becomes self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one happens in this chapter. He says, "Surely this was a warped, unhealthy way for her to begin her romantic life."
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yes, it certainly is. Not even worth writing a book about.
I would say so. Yeah. But yeah, that's what she sort of reveals, that he is her first infatuation, he says, which pleases him, but also troubles him.
Yes. And again, going back to that thing that he's sifting through information, he starts asking her about college and all of that. And she rambles on about going to a state school or whatever. Exactly what you'd expect from someone her age and level of intelligence. And he says not even a half second had passed. Bella was still chewing, thinking about some mystery I would never know.
She's
a dumb kid thinking about state school. She's not Anais Nin, you know?
She could be pondering where her mom came from, I suppose. Like,
I guess. But she's not a deep well. Why does he keep insisting upon it? It's getting comical at this point.
Right. But like also for our listeners who might not know, you just might want to fill in our listeners about Anais Nin just in case some of our listeners weren't familiar with who that might be.
Oh, sure. Anais Nin.
Yeah, and I'll throw in as you explain to.
Okay, if I miss any detail, you let me know.
I will.
Author famous for, I believe she was like Swiss French.
Swiss author, Swiss French author.
Very famous for her love affairs with Henry Miller.
The playwright. Yeah.
Right, yes. And then why don't you take it from here then?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, what else do you need to say at that point in time? Henry Miller and I mean, just, you know, Swiss French. So paints a picture.
Famous for her correspondences and sort of deep inner life, like her books with her letters and musing about life are very deep and famous. And
the exact opposite of chewing on your lip while you imagine this ambitious worldview. He sort of asks her what she would do like after college. And she says, if I could, well, I'd like to teach on a college level somewhere, probably a community college, elective English classes, so that everyone who signed up is there because they want to be. And his response is that what you've always wanted? It's like, well, I hope to God not. I hope at least for at some point in time she was like, I don't know, president, astronaut, like all those, you know, the things you say in kindergarten when you're asked what you want to be.
Right. She has very, very, very low expectations for her own life.
Right. Low but specific.
Which he finds just enchanting. Oh, my dearest love. I don't understand the explanation for having to go hunting with Alice. Mm-hmm. That seemed like it was 600% too long.
Yeah.
Why? Just say, I gotta go. I gotta go hunt with Alice.
Yeah, it seems like they are like, Alice has had a vision, right? She's had a vision of what happens in when he takes her to the meadow to reveal his sparkly nature. And this vision is just sort of danced around. Like, obviously it's that he kills her and drains her of blood. But yes. I don't think she ever comes out and says that. She's just it's horrible, doesn't. Edward. It's insane. Like
she's drilling down for 15 pages on, you know, Bella's choice of state school. And then when the vision of her death comes around, she can't be bothered to describe what's going on.
It's insane. I mean, why do you provide his perspective if you leave off the teen's horny fantasies and the visions of her being killed in a meadow?
Right. And leaving off at the beginning of this chapter, leaving off 7 hours of him sitting in the rocking chair staring at Bella. Come on, man.
Right, that's what we're here for. This is what...
So like, I didn't get that, but she's ticked off by it because they were just going to wander around and say to each other, what are you thinking, 400 times? But unfortunately,
that's the reality she's hoping for. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But like, right. So she goes... And they have some talk about the population of mountain lions, and they're concerned about that in environmental impact. But my takeaway from this was when he left school, and his talk to Bella was, it's probably for the best, you know, that I leave early. Mm-hmm. We still have 15 minutes of that wretched movie left to endure in biology. I don't think I could take anymore. So not only do they just cram Lorenzo's oil into the story, they go out of their way to slam it from the perspective of a 104-year-old vampire.
Listen up, pasty. I was making movies when you were wearing short pants.
So I thought we had heard the last of it last week, but we might have more Lorenzo's oil to come.
God bless them for that. I have my final note for this chapter is a Kleinian note.
Okay.
I felt my eyebrows pull together. That's how that works, right?
Right. Yeah, they're just sort of like magnetically attracted to each other.
I immediately made an appointment with my GP Doc, what is going on? I'm starting to feel my eyebrows.
Yeah, it's like there's a guy who's at the beginning of Mario 64. There's two hands that are just pulling him together, you know, pulling his nose up and to the left. yeah, that's a disturbing thing to feel.
What do you got? You got anything else for closer?
Yeah, well, he says he's asking her what she's going to do, like why she wants to go to the meadow with him, which is, you know, 40% of this section is like, why are you doing this? Why are you spending time with me? And he's asking her about her dad, though, and says, if you don't come home, I ask through my teeth, what will Charlie think? Her face was smooth. I have no idea. He knows I've been meaning to do laundry. Maybe he'll think I fell in the washer. I glared at her. I did not find her joke humorous in the slightest. So there's still some stuff we can relate to, despite all this garbage. Glaring at her for her absolutely humorless jokes is one of those things.
I love Charlie's quickly becoming one of my favorite characters. He was in the movie as well, but there's a good example of it in the movie and the book by Jerzy Kosinski, Being There. It's probably before your time, but it's a guy who's just very, very simple. And he's a gardener, and his name is Chance. He just was an orphan. And so he calls himself Chance Chauncey Gardner, people mistake him as. And he wanders around just being a doofus, and everyone attributes greatness to him because he's a doofus. Uh-huh. I mean, it's a common story, but it's well done. But that's what Charlie is. He's just like this doofus wandering around bumping into things with his fishing pole.
Yes.
What will Charlie think?
Right. Oh, Charlie. Nope. Charlie, this is the old folks home. You got to go cast that rod into the stream. They turn him around by his shoulders and like, you know, 500 paces that away, Charlie. Go get him.
Oh, but Charlie was up to something much more devious than that.
that story that you described sounds sort of like the... how Lawnmower Man gets started.
Yeah, it's a similar story. Yes,
hopefully with as good special effects.
Oh yes. I don't think there's any digital in there. Peter Sellers in that. I think he won an Oscar for it.
No, oh, nice.
Anyway, right. that's chapter that's 14 yeah. Closer.
Chapter 15 is less ambiguously pronounced. It's called Probability, which is sort of like that song in one of the Twilight movies. There's a probability.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
that. I think that's the second movie. That was a performer named Leaky Lee. I'm not sure
Leaky
where she's
Lee,
from.
That's right. Yeah.
Sounds like it could be Icelandic, that country it that does. Bella was not familiar with. But I had a friend, my friend Adam one time, was like, yeah, that's great, sort of like putting on music for, you know, while you're working or something. Great background music. And I'm like, I could never do that because, you know, regardless of what I would have thought of that song if I had no context for it, I do have extreme context for it now. And it would just sort of be like nails on chalkboard.
Yeah, it's like I realized again that we did Starship Troopers. Mazzy Star is in the background.
Oh, yeah. Fade into
mild
me.
Affection for that song, you know, in my youth. But then I heard it in Starship Troopers. Damn it. Burned.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Burned forever.
Well, so this continues with more of Alice's vague talk. I think this is while they're actually hunting, but just still very frustrating. She says stuff like this. I'm telling you that she has futures beyond the meadow, but first she has to go through the meadow, the metaphorical meadow, if you catch my meaning. We don't. If you could explain just in the slightest what the hell you are talking about, it might help us catch your meaning.
Yeah, here's just a few of the phrases. I'd never look beyond the ghastly central image. Alice had been able to absorb the gruesome tableau was set in the same meadow where I plan to take Bella tomorrow.
Oh, my God. Give
Not
us the details.
Described, yes. Yeah. Intensely frustrating.
Yeah, because maybe it's like a crazy thing. Maybe he like bites off one of her toes and sucks out all the blood like a boba tea through the straw that is her big toe. Like, that would be cool.
It does get a wan one sentence. Bella's body in my arms, twisted and white and lifeless. A ragged...
But that sounds like what he does when he watches her sleep. I mean, twisted and white, it's like not like she's translucent.
That is true. I know. We don't get any details about it. We're just supposed to know that he kills her.
Right.
I guess that's enough.
They start talking about, they start referring to it as the crisis. I've seen the third way, Edward. If you can get through the crisis, there's a new path out there. It's still not very probable, but I'd like you to know it was there. If you two get through the crisis, this is out there. So, yeah, going to the meadow is now the crisis. And there was something in the last chapter, too, where Alice said something like, you know, Edward, Alice protested shrilly. I love her, Edward. So that sort of came out of nowhere as well, just like the slam on Lorenzo's oil. But Alice loves Bella.
I was very, very puzzled by that. I didn't understand. Later, I thought that I had mistakenly read that. But that, yeah. So that's true.
It's there, yeah. I guess she can fall in love based on her visions of the future. I don't know.
So strange. Speaking of the future, I think he's acknowledging an afterlife now.
Okay.
So we're told he has knowledge of angels and there are none. I mean, he has knowledge that there aren't any angels, so he can prove a negative. The future did not cheat her of either life or afterlife.
Wow.
So afterlife is acknowledged.
Huh. I wonder if that's on the Twilight Wiki along with the Mighty Ducks.
Well, don't you think he'd muse about that in his 109 years? Say, if there is an afterlife, then what is this whole system? And maybe there's a way out of this.
Yeah, he spent 1 year. He's like, okay, this year I'm going to get really good at speed running Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. And then next year I'm going to go travel and like study the Talmud and just sort of, you know, get up to date on the whole spirituality thing.
And then I'll get really good at lawn bowling after that.
That's right, yeah. I mean, hey, I've got all the time in the world. I may as well excel at a few different things.
Oh, I'm going to hit you with the first of not very many Sonic challenges, in case those are annoying to people. This is Alice, so get your Alice character on. Do you have your backstory and your Bible sitting right there?
I love Bella, that's all I know.
Okay. She trilled a laugh. Mm-hmm. It was a nervous sound, bird-like.
God.
A lot going on there.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Oh, you went, yeah, slightly like kookaburra or...
Mockingbird? I was thinking outside my window at 4 a.m.
Oh, okay, mockingbird, yeah. Yeah. I suppose a mockingbird, if they were hanging around kookaburras, could do it, right?
Yeah, they could do a passable kookaburra. My a good family friend got attacked by a kookaburra when my parents and her went to Australia. My mom sent a picture of it. It's and, you know, I think it actually, like, drew blood from her finger or something. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I got attacked by a kookaburra. It's hard to, it's like, oh, well, I certainly hope you're okay after that vicious attack. Like, she's in the hospital, Connor.
Wow.
Yeah, she didn't go to, but like, you know, it's a funny animal.
I assume it was at a not just in the wild.
They were attending the Sydney Opera House. That's the craziest thing about it. Wow. No, it was that, I'm sure at a wildlife park or something.
Right. That is quite a story. I have never been attacked by a kookaburra. I will tell you, I believe this is true, and man, I'm going to put myself out there. I believe that the jungle sound from every old movie, the that is a kookaburra.
Wow.
Which of course, does not live anywhere near the continent of Africa. But the classic jungle sound is that.
Wow, cool.
Prove me wrong.
Kookaburra's name, Wilhelm.
Yes. So how does this work? So Alice can look in the future and she gives Vegas odds on Edward killing Bella? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's like the the national polls for the presidential race. They're just like, you know, well, in Wisconsin there's a 60% chance of you killing her, but Nevada's shoring up. That's at 75%.
How does that work, do you think, in real time? Like looking at like a wall of monitors?
Yeah, sort of Minority Report.
And then, but who's pushing away the possibilities? Like, what is it's when Edward goes, yeah, I think I'll pick up this glass and pour a Coke Zero. Like, 69%.
Sprite, then?
Let me step on this butterfly.
Right.
Everything's ruined.
Yeah, that's the sort of insight we're getting here from Edward's perspective. Yeah, it's baffling. It's like sliding doors eternally in her mind. It must be utterly maddening.
Especially to have to calculate the odds. Like, I mean, how easy is it to do that? Like, right. How is that come? How are the actual numbers come? Is what I want to get down and gritty. I want to sift these numbers.
I don't know. It could be like the win probability charts in sporting events they have now. Just it's constantly moving with every average, with every action.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, I would think she would have committed suicide long ago, having to come up with those. That would drive me insane, but I guess she's got it going.
Well, Tony, you mentioned that. He says, for a few moments, I thought seriously about killing myself. It would be the only way I knew to be sure that the monster didn't survive. How does that work in this world? Right? Like,
well, don't we learn
they're
later?
Immortal.
Well, we learn later they tear the heads off of them, don't they?
I guess they do tear the heads off each other, so he could just do that to himself.
Well, he could just go to some guys. He knows other vampires. Just go, hey, guys, do me a solid.
Kevorkian me.
You get to eat my... Don't they? Do they do? So they get to eat each other? I don't remember.
I think they don't have blood. They have venom. So, yeah, I guess you could do that. You could just... but still, it sort of like, you know, takes away from the whole immortal thing if you can just like decide you're going to kill each other to prevent the 60% chance of, you know, draining someone's blood in a meadow.
I feel like she glossed over the you can't kill yourself thing pretty easily. Again, and it's like the mentioning the afterlife and then just going, but forget about that. yeah, there is a way to kill yourself because we've seen vampires die. So,
right. Okay. Well, yeah, I think you have to go to the Volturi. I think that's maybe what she hand waved away early on in the book.
What, he can't fly? He's afraid of flying to Italy or what?
Right. But he does manage to work through this major sort of existential drama, and he does it, it's not as hard as you think it might be. He says, and then suddenly, as I thought those words, it didn't feel so impossible. Of course I could do that. I could be the Edward that Bella wanted. Oh, okay. Cool. Good. I guess that moved the needle.
Done.
Yeah.
Dust the hands off and walk away from the table. You're good.
Yeah. So he's addicted to her as a substance, wants to kill her. And that's I think it's a great failing of our nation's intervention system that you just, our addicts don't make that same decision when their family members tell them they have a problem.
Right. Wow.
Oh, sure. Oh, heroin. Yeah. I'll knock it off.
Okay, then. Well, good. I guess I did not go to... I don't guess. I did not go to Facts King, so I don't know. But how many Washington State lion parks are there?
Oh, Mike. I mean, just add them up. I mean, you can't throw a baseball without hitting a lion park.
And I will say, with spare lions that people won't notice are missing. Right? They're hunting lions.
Yeah, they're hunting mountain lions. I don't know. It's the state school's mascot, so I imagine that they're a beloved yet protected species. I'd be surprised if there weren't any that hadn't been tagged by the Department of Wildlife.
I think they're all accounted for, but I don't know. It just seems like that would arouse suspicion when you start culling the mountain lions.
Right.
I could be wrong.
Right, because you're not like putting them in your mouth like a cartoon cat and pulling out the skeleton. You're draining the blood, and I assume leaving some sort of a desiccated form there, like for the rangers to discover.
Right, right. But mountain lions take what, like a life every 15 years or so?
Yeah, I mean they're the classic more scared of you than you are of them type of thing.
Except occasionally. Wasn't there like a couple years ago, like a woman beat up a mountain lion or something?
You might be thinking of Buffalo Rider, the movie.
Oh, right. let's see. I think that, no, I guess I have a couple more.
Yeah, we've got some more things because he picks out his outfit for the meadow trip. He says the main point of our clothing was to help us blend in, to embrace the current time period's fashion, to downplay our pallor, and to cover as much of our skin as possible without looking shockingly out of season. At that moment, I remembered a shirt stuck in the back recesses of my closet that I've never worn. The shirt was an anomaly. And I was just like, oh, Big Johnson tank top, Taz shirts from the 90s where he's got a backwards hat on and baggy pants. But no, it turns out it's a white cotton shirt.
That he's shopped for by... Alice buys all their clothes, right?
Yeah, she does. She picks everything out for him.
And just hangs it in his closet, but she made a mistake, so she hung it at the back of his closet.
Those are the details that we're just glad this book is 750 pages long.
I immediately thought of, because I pulled this up, because a guy I was with, I said this phrase, and he looked at me, understandably, as though I had grown a second head, when I said, "The guys get shirts. The guys get shirts." And he goes, "What are you doing?" So I played it for him. And to his credit, he likes unmotivated rage as much as I did. And
it doesn't get any more motivated.
It made him laugh very hard.
Buddy Rich?
Paul Anka.
Paul Anka, you're okay.
It's a classic, one of those caught behind the scenes rage moments. Only Bill O'Reilly tops it, really. It's a little long. And unfortunately, the fidelity of it is not good enough to hang in there for the whole thing. But the guys get shirts is very memorable.
Yes, the guys get shirts, and I think it's, I forget the lead up to it, but I slice like a fucking hammer.
Yes.
Well-known slicing implement.
I move quickly, and when I move, I slice like a hammer. Anyway, so Edward gets a shirt.
The vampires get shirts.
And it is four paragraphs of shirt selection. What is she doing at this point?
I don't know.
It's just two sentences. I realized that I had to, to prove to her what I am, I had to show more of my flesh to the sun. So I chose a short sleeve shirt and out the door I went.
Right. Well, yeah, and but one where the whole buildup is that they're, as we see, they're driving, hours to get to this place and then hiking in miles to get to a patch of sunlight. Like, you feel like maybe the whole thing is a little overblown. Maybe he could have, gone outside to his backyard and rolled up his sleeve to show her.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another story. But I just don't understand the just drilling down on, like, going back to Alice buying their clothes and everything. It's like, good Lord. I mean, I would much rather hear about Charlie, what Charlie's lure selection.
Yeah.
Charlie was tossing it into the structure by the bank under the tree. So he used a hula popper, which he jigged along and, hoping to get smallmouth bass. Give me 25 paragraphs on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Make it a river runs through it. The only thing we get about Charlie here is them saying, his was a simple life. Nothing serious weighed on his conscience.
Charlie.
Yeah, he's a big cartoon dog. But, like, really? Nothing serious weighed on his conscience? He is the chief of police. Like, there has to have been at least something he's seen over the past year that must, at least make it harder for him to fall asleep at night.
Yeah, you just made me realize Charlie is a Bugs Bunny adversary. Like, I have to arrest the rabbit.
I gotta mess with this guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope that maybe the mayor of Port Angeles could have been like, well, after the multiple murders and assaults, like, I'll just put a APB out to the various police chiefs of neighboring towns. Like, and Charlie is like, duh, Port Angeles, that's far away.
Here's a question for you. And the answer is contained within the question, of course. But is this page 20 or page 223? I hadn't seen Bella for hours. Was she safe now?
Oh, my God. Yep. Still fretting.
Oh, God.
He does manage to take some time out from worrying about whether she's safe to flashback to December of 1919 in St. John's, New Brunswick.
Oh, wow. I miss her. I don't have any notes on it. Remind me of that.
He sort of flashes back and, like, my takeaway was that we're supposed to imagine this as sort of being like Dickensian time, like him and Carlyle are wandering the streets at Christmas. So, like, the Christmas wreaths and candles are out and they're wearing their top hats and tails as they walk along this town. The people of St. John's, New Brunswick did not come across well in his description. The human faces were so completely different from ours, their dull pitted skin, their poorly molded features, so rounded and lumpy, the mottled colors of their imperfect flesh, the cloudy, rheumy eyes must be nearly blind. It's like, you were human 6 months ago. Like, he's like the kid who studied abroad and then came back and was like, oh, there's nothing to do in this town. It was so much more, continental where I was.
He caps that with, and by the way, I have that marked with a firm settle down. It was several years before I grew accustomed to human faces. So for several years, he's walking around going, oh, cover that mottled lump up, will you?
Yeah.
Wipe the room out of your eyes.
He's got elephant man hoods he's just handing out left and right to people. It's like, and sure, it was 1919. That's when everyone, you know, all those coronet shorts we do are like, you know. So I went home and talked to my mom, and the mom is clearly like 85 years old. But so you know, people were not as hot, but I mean, yeah, dial it back.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard life back then, so they do age a little earlier, but I think their eyes worked. I mean, I don't think they were, like, right. Pouring green, yellow matter custard out of their eyes. I missed, by the way, I just wanted, so I don't miss it, another Charlie is a dumbass line.
Okay.
I could hear Charlie watching a sports recap in the front room.
It's funny just to describe it as such, just from that's the point of view of like a sports ball kind of person, a sports recap.
Right.
But like I'm imagining it's a game that Charlie has already watched and then is just watching a recap of it just to, you know, because there's nothing else on or he lost the remote or something.
I picture him in his fly fishing hat and he's casting a lead weight across the room and breaking Hmong vases, you know.
Whoops. Someone's knocked on our door to you know, tell him that he's the you know, he needs to inspect his social security card, and Charlie has handed it over, and it's like, you know, only realized hours later that he fell victim to a scam yet again.
Bella, I did it again. Charlie,
damn it.
Here's a Stephanie Meyer prose that I call out. It's not super bad, but it's just weird in a strange way. The wreaths and the candles, the music and the gatherings, none of it seemed to apply to me. I mean, when I see wreaths and candles around Christmas, I don't think they apply to me, do they? Is that how things... I think she means appeal to me?
Ha, it could be. It could be that, you know, you don't sing all the verses of Christmas carols, you know, like you never get to the third verse of Jingle Bells, but I think it is... Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la, apply to all. I think that's how it devolves into.
Right. Oh, but then Vampire Christmas. It is pretty good.
Yeah. The only line that I highlighted was, I've got popcorn, Carlisle told me. I thought you might like to join in the trimming. And I just imagined the only actual reaction is, damn it, why didn't you let me die?
Well... again, it would come up as he's musing about his eternity in hell to go, what are we celebrating again? Oh, Christmas. That's right. What is the meaning of this?
Right. Yes.
It's just odd that it doesn't come up. But we meet Siobhan and Maggie.
Yeah. But we don't know where Liam is.
Right.
And Liam is missing. But
yeah, I pulled these few sentences, and some listeners may not know a friend of the show, friend of ours, Bob Fingerman, terrific artist. He calls himself cartoonist, so let's use his word.
Sure.
If he's listening, here you go, Bob. She was profoundly female in shape, aggressively, forcefully female. Yeah. It had been in another lifetime that I had last noticed a woman this way, and I found it was hard-pressed to know where to put my eyes. Eyes up here. I centered them on her face, which, like her body, was intensely female. Her lips were full and curved, her deep crimson eyes enormous and fringed by lashes thicker than the needles on the pine boughs. Her glossy black hair was piled into a generous roll on top of her head, with two thin wooden rods carelessly stabbed through to hold it in place.
My God.
She just goes purple prose just out of nowhere.
Yeah, you're left wondering, you know, what does Mike Newton look like? What does Tyler Crowley look like? And then you get this thrown at us. But yeah, I left off after aggressively, forcefully female just because I just couldn't picture what that meant. Does she have, you know, does she have like extra tattoos of like female genitalia on her like biceps or something? Like, is she doubling down on that? Like, what? Yeah.
I don't know what that means. That's, well, We'll leave it up to Bob if he chooses to.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that was a major question mark in my book, like aggressively, forcefully female. All right.
But she's also super, she's large, right?
Yeah, he says she is taller than either Carlyle or me, with broader shoulders and thicker limbs. However, there was nothing masculine about her.
So what is this implying, that there is, like, we know the physical change of, you know, the physical change of the other vampires is fairly, it's modest in that they can walk into a high school cafeteria and pretend to eat peach cobbler and nobody, you know, notices. But this creature couldn't walk into a, right? She's not going to go, like, I'm going to get a job at the tire shop. People are going to go, what are you?
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, it could be like the three-breasted alien in Total Recall, I suppose. But it also makes her just sort of seem like an Amazon, you know, or like one of the big fairies that come out of the fountain in Zelda. I'm not sure. It's.
But she's just an Irish woman, right? Siobhan, I assume. She's,
yeah.
So Irish known to be like 7 feet tall and have six breasts? I don't know.
Maybe anyway. In 1919 New Brunswick. I haven't looked into it.
That's true. All right. What else you got?
Well, Siobhan is sort of like she's thrown by their relationship. She says, son, Siobhan thought, at first thrown by the word. Ah, so he's chosen to create his companion after all this time. Interesting. I wonder why now. There must be something special about the boy. So, yeah, this is something that vampires are doing. They create boy companions to sort of travel the nether regions of Canada with them. It reminded me of the end of Ready Player One, where they go into like the virtual world and the creator of everything has that just random boy that he's sitting with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The boy is like playing video games, but he just doesn't speak. And Halliday is like, no questions about my boy.
Right. Right. Yeah. And this is the first time that Edward thinks that it might be unusual, or what is the, to be deprived of the greatest joy of his life, of this life.
Yeah.
And that sort of echoes in his mind.
Mm-hmm. That she means like drinking human blood.
Correct. Yes. But that took me a second. I'm like, is this going to be seeding something else? Like, nope, it's just the vegetarian thing.
Right. Yeah. The only other note I had from this was just his description of the first time he tasted human blood.
He says,
my body was overwhelmed. It felt totally filled and totally well, more alive than before. Even though the blood was not of the greatest quality, my first prey's body was saturated with bitter-tasting drugs. It made my usual fare seem like ditch water. So he tracked down an addict, killed them, drank their blood, and felt the need to sort of posthumously diss him about his quality of blood. Our hero.
Yes. Well, I wondered about that. He keeps trying to maintain his virtue by saying he only killed people who really deserved it. So there's some poor guy, you know, entrapped by his own addictions. He deserved it, I guess.
Right,
I don't
exactly.
Know.
Yeah. Shouldn't have wandered into New Brunswick, man. That's your own fault.
I look, this was acetaminophen. I have a back injury.
Right, yeah. It got a little out of control, but like, you know, I have a sponsor. We're working towards my cure.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'm glad at least you weren't ditch water, pal.
Well, that's all I have. I think we should do some real or fanfic.
All right, I am looking forward to it. And now I bet they bitching because my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write. I bought some fan fiction. Can't they just be
happy? I no longer have to face eviction that I'm living on my life. I'm living on my inner vision. Well, well, well.
Mm-hmm.
The tables have turned. This is
as they are wont to do.
Want to do. I will see if these apply to you. this is a real or fanfic. This is where one of us, usually Connor, challenges the other of us, usually me, to tell whether these little selections that people have either sent in, they're either real from the book coming up, mm-hmm. or they are fanfic made by either our listeners or sometimes someone else.
Yeah.
Right? You've culled from other, people have culled from other sources.
that's how it got started. An actual fanfic written by, you know, fans of the book. So it could be any of those three. Although we only identify whether they're fanfic or real. We don't get penalized for not knowing where they came from.
Right. And so we have five samples here, and Connor is going to one by one guess whether they are real and fanfic. We'll tabulate them and give his score at the end. So once again, these could either all be fanfic, they could all be real, or some combination thereof. Connor, do you understand the rules?
I do understand, and I'm predicting great things today.
Do you sign your life over to the results of this?
Sure. What do I care?
Okay, good. Because, you know, you could live forever.
Oh.
Yeah, you didn't know that? All right, here we go.
No. Okay, fine.
Nope. You belong to the devil now. All right, number one. Let me help you up, I say, knowing full well this is an excuse to put my hands on her, touch her. I slide my arm under her shoulder, which brings my face very close to her hair. She smells so good, and I gently pull her up. I grasp her legs at the knees and pull them back onto the floor so she's sitting on the bed, feet on the floor. How does that feel? I ask gently. Okay, she replies timidly. Thank you. I sit back on my heels, still on my knees. You really are the clumsiest girl I've ever met. She flushes. I'm so sorry. She swallows and stares down at her knotted fingers, and I'm suddenly terrified that she's going to cry. Hey, I'm just teasing you. I'm sorry. And before I can stop myself, I've swept my fingers down her face to beneath her chin and pulled her face up so that she's looking at me eyes wide. Honestly, I'm just teasing. And I'm reeling. Her skin is so petal soft beneath my fingers, and I'm trying to think of ways of detaining her for longer.
Ugh. Detaining? I think that is fanfic. I think it's a... I think that the touching came a little too easy for him. We've seen him struggle with that. But it's well done. They got in a good headspace for it.
Okay.
Pedal soft, yeah.
All right, number two. Curious, I switched on her radio. I was surprised that it was tuned to nothing but static. Then, considering the volume of the engine, I deduced that she didn't bother much with driving music. I twisted the knob until I found a semi-audible station. It was playing Johnny Ace, and I smiled. Pledging my love. How apt. I began to sing along, feeling a little cheesy, but also enjoying the chance to say these words to her. Always and forever, I'll love only you. She never took her eyes off my face, smiling in what I could now accurately construe as wonder. You like 50s music? She asked when the song ended. Music in the 50s was good. Much better than the 60s or the 70s. Ugh. Though there were certainly excellent outliers, the artists that were played most often on the limited radio options were not my favorites. I'd never warmed up to disco. The 80s were bearable.
My God. I think it's fanfic because, I've never heard of Johnny Ace. But we can't still be talking about your petty preferences after 400 pages of this book. We can't be.
Okay. Number three. In all my years, I had never done something like this, dinner, with an actual family. I was never more glad that Carlisle was by my side, to protect me, to protect us. Sorry, Charlie said, walking in from the kitchen. Bella didn't let me know what you Cullens like to eat. I hope fish is okay. I'm sorry, Carlisle whispered. We're vegetarians. All the Cullens are. I had to put forth significant effort to keep from bursting out laughing at Carlisle's unintentional joke. Ugh. I'm sure Bella picked up on it, too. I searched Charlie's mind to see if we'd offended him in some way. Had I ruined the future if I ruined the night? And this is Charlie thinking, huh, I wouldn't have guessed that. More for us then.
Die, get more fish now.
Yes.
I think that's fanfic. I don't think the line about him never having done a family dinner, that doesn't seem correct. He did live till 17.
Okay. Number four. I glanced at him from the corner of my eye and found myself so incredibly bored. It seemed as if there could be nothing less interesting in the world than this nondescript vampire standing docilely to one side of our grouping. Nondescript? Docile? Jasper? Jasper was concentrating so hard that, had he been human, his body would have been dripping with sweat. I'd never seen him do this before or ever even guessed it was possible. Was this something he developed during his years in the South? Camouflage? He was concurrently smoothing the tension surrounding the newcomers and making anyone looking in his direction feel singularly uninterested. Nothing could be duller than examining this nothing male at the back of the group, so unimportant.
Oh, man. I feel like the Southern roots might be a tip-off, because we've talked about that before, that it's fanfic, but also I'm just trying to imagine this scenario that's happening, and it seems like something that could be a section from later in the book, so I'll say real.
All right. And finally, I scooted my chair a foot from her bed. I think I hear your mother. Renee was climbing the stairs now, on her way to get some quarters from her bag, worrying about the junk food she'd been consuming over the past few days. She wished she had time for a gym visit, but for now the stairs would have to do. Bella's face contorted. I assumed it was pain. I leaned close again, desperate for something to do. "Don't leave me," Bella said, a sob close to the surface of her voice. Her eyes were tight with fear. I didn't want to think about this reaction. In my head, Alice's vision tormented me. Bella curled in on herself in agony, gasping for air. I gathered myself for a moment, then tried to answer casually. "I won't. I'll take a nap."
Oh, man. I don't know how the mom is going to factor into all this, but that seemed mundane enough that it could be real. I'll say real.
Damn it, you son of a... You only got one wrong.
All right.
God.
I'll take it. Well, what were they?
First one, grasping her petal-soft skin.
Uh-huh.
That is fanfic from E.L. James.
Okay. Wait, what? Oh, what?
Yes. This is sent in by Lorne.
Okay.
I'm just going to read a little bit. Here. Because E.L. James also wrote Grey, which is 50 Shades told from the guy's POV, directly ripping off Midnight Sun. So this means that before E.L. James wrote a Twilight fanfic where she changed the character names to turn it into 50 Shades, she wrote another Twilight fanfic where she changed the character name to turn it into the Mister, and the Mister is itself a fanfic of a different story. And then E.L. wrote her own POV swap ripoff to the book we're reading now, for which I'm submitting fanfic to.
Oh, my God.
It's a red yarn board of fanfic.
Yeah, that's a complicated web.
Yes. Oh, wait. E.L. James went back to Safe Haven, took the rich boy first-person dialogue. So, yeah, it goes on and on. She wrote a second alternative Twilight fanfic, Safe Haven.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she paid her dues, I guess, then.
Yeah. All right.
This could be you.
Yes. So, number two, you said was fanfic. That was real.
Johnny Ace. Edward is a fan of 50s music, but not 60s and 70s.
I think the takeaway was music in the 50s was good. Much better than the 60s or the 70s.
Well, I'm glad he abides by just the decade demarcation. That's something you might abandon once you get immortal, but sure.
Yes. So that was sent in by John and one other person whose name is not in front of me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. And this, the one with the fishing and fish... serving fish dinner. That was Harris fanfic.
Okay. Yeah, but it was good.
Took a chance on the dumbass Charlie, but
that's for us. But I think the only thing that tipped me was just him saying, "I've never had a family dinner before," and that seemed like, maybe, you know, it just seemed potentially inaccurate.
Damn it, Harris! All right, number four, Jasper making himself boring. That is real.
Wow!
Some sort of camouflage.
That's his vampire power.
And the ending with "I'll take a nap." I think isn't Bella goes to the hospital later or something? I don't know.
Maybe.
And I think
her
the book
mom comes.
I was looking ahead. I don't think this is a spoiler. I don't think this book covers any more than the first movie. So
yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. So her mom comes to visit. Renee comes to visit, and yeah, he says to placate her, "I'll take a nap," which is always a good. Character action. So well done.
Thank you.
Grudgingly.
It was hard. I wouldn't have put confidence high after that, but sometimes you just got it.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you do it again next week?
I don't know. It's. I mean, I can, sure. But yeah.
Do that.
Fine. All right. Yeah. I can up my, I'll get 100%.
Yeah. Small sample size.
I'll call the shot.
Yeah. All right.
Send them in. Yeah. So send them in as PDFs again, and we'll, or docs, and we'll do it again.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Well, for now, let's do chapter 16, The Knot.
Yes. The Knot. So here's where I thought they're going to the woods in chapter 16, The Knot, to watch him sparkle. I just want, spoiler alert for everyone, it does not happen in chapter 16. For the love of all that is good and holy. What?
Well, when you have a, you know, sort of climactic moment like your character stepping into the sun, you want to, you know, you want to build that up as much as possible.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like a soap opera where, you know, they're going to, you know, open up the grave to see if the body's actually in it, and it's 3 weeks in the making of them you know, digging the hole.
Yeah, this is you know, Jim and Pam on The Office. Will they get together?
Yes, get together.
This is at the beginning of the chapter, and I just put, are we really restating this again? Here's Edward. I wished I could feel the joy of it, an entire day by your side, answers to every question I could ask, her warmth surrounding me. Put a pin in that bullshit. At the same time, I wished I could turn my back on her house this moment and run in the opposite direction, that I could be strong enough to run to the far side of the world and stay there, never to endanger her again. Isn't that like the mission statement of the whole book?
Mm, yes.
Why are we restating this again? This is what we're in the middle of.
Yeah.
So he stops and just restates the whole ball of wax.
Yeah. It would be, you know, the three little pigs, just like every other sentence just saying, and the wolf wanted to eat the pigs.
Yes.
We're aware. That's his whole purpose.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, yeah, if that is going to be a sticking point for you, I have just some serious bad news about what we covered the rest of this section.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
But you'll be happy to know that they are dressed alike, and that's very amusing. They just, you know, he chuckles when he sees that, something in common again.
So she has a white shirt on that Alice bought her and put at the back of her closet, or what?
It must have been, yeah, just an item she doesn't wear too often, but...
yeah. Cute. Hey, I have I'm going to simulate this moment as best I can. I have just a very cheap prop here, but I want you to tell me when this is describes the action that I'm about to describe. You'll understand.
Is it a cheap prop because you spent all our money on the 372 players last week?
Yeah, well, no, I also just went into our...
You took a loan out for props?
Yes. I mean, it's cheap-ish. It's cheap. It'll do the trick is what I'm saying. I just realized there's no returns on this. I hope it works. Anyway. all right. She ran to the door and fought with the bolt for a long moment, finally yanking the door open so forcefully that it smacked into the wall with a bang.
Okay.
So I just want you to... I'm going to simulate the sound of the... bolt being fiddled with for a long moment.
Long
you
moment.
Tell me when that moment is done, okay?
Okay. Okay.
So you've knocked on the door. Hang on. It's just slide.
Is there a pro
one way, but it doesn't.
Is that Bella, is that you?
Just switch the.
Should I go around back or?
How does Charlie ever even open this?
I don't know. He's pretty dumb. That's amazing that he can do it and you can't.
Should I push? Does he push or do you pull down?
No, you usually pull on a door to open it. That's
just, it's not coming. Can you sparkle Tuesday?
No,
I could get a locksmith out.
That's Jasper's power. I read thoughts. I can't. I don't do bolts. Maybe Tyler Crowley could ram his car through the door to open it.
Like, I get it. Okay, wait.
That's a long moment. Okay. door locks can be tricky. Maybe it runs in the family.
Well, again, that's one of the things that all of our authors have in common is just stumbling over common things. Like,
right,
I stared at her for a full minute. Why do you have to say that?
Well, he takes her out on the in his car, or they drive her car to go out to this place, which is at least an hour away. I feel like this meadow in the books. I always in the movies. I assumed it was just, you know, behind one of their houses. Because they end up there so often.
Yeah, they just, it really did seem like it's right outside the parking lot of the school or.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, they drive on up there and she didn't get a lot of details. She just hopped in the car with him and he's like, I'm going to take you somewhere and reveal something to her. But he sort of explains on the way what happens. He says, now we drive till the pavement ends. And what's there, she asked, at the pavement's end? An empty forest. A total lack of witnesses. A monster. That's what he thinks. A trail. Her voice was higher, tighter when she responded, still staring only at the road. We're hiking! So, yeah, then we get a couple of those as we move on. Maybe you can do this one, the Sonic Challenge. The trail? Her voice was an octave higher than usual. And then she says, no trail? She said the word trail as if she were referring to the last life vest on a sinking ship.
Wait, so she says the trail and then no trail?
Octave higher than usual, and then he says there's not a trail. And she says no trail, and the word trail as if she was referring to the last life vest on a sinking ship.
Okay. All right, here we go. Octave higher.
The trail! No trail!
Yeah, that's what Billy Zane was saying when he grabbed the child on Titanic.
But as they drive up there, here's a question for you, Washington State people. Do you do the loathsome California and add the before your freeways? Take the 101 north? Is that a thing?
I don't know. I don't find it particularly loathsome. It's just sort of how you talk. But I did pick up on that.
So when you take Oak Street, do you say take the Oak Street? Why
no?
Why
but
does
like
it get the honorarium. It's a freeway. It's called 101. The 101. It's like the chief, the dude. It's just 101.
I guess it's a bit quirky, but...
It's loathsome.
Okay. yeah, I did notice that, though. But yeah, maybe it's just all the way up the West Coast, and just California gets all the credit.
I was so annoyed by it that I looked it up once, and it did start with five, and it was to impress everyone with the... And then it just spread to, you know, the 405. Like
it was to impress everyone. Like who did they just people made that decision in their secret California meetings. That
yeah,
had?
in their PR about the project was called the.
Huh.
And give it this gravitas.
Oh, okay. Like
the boss is coming. You know, right. the five is being built.
So does it bother you when she says the trail?
Is it called Trail?
it's called Trail. well, so we got a couple descriptions here. One of them is, you know, the first of like his sort of many horny moments in this. He can see her shoulders, but then he takes his own sweater off, feeling glaringly conspicuous. I'd never uncovered so much of my skin around anyone but my family. So that's kind of weird. But then she does a quick double take, her eyes running up and down my bared skin. And this was nothing, just pale skin. Well, extremely pale skin, bent in a slightly inhuman way over the angularity of my inhuman musculature. So that's a hell of a correction. It's just pale skin. Okay, well, it's extremely pale skin, bent in a slightly inhuman way over the angularity of my inhuman musculature.
Yeah, picture the bodies exhibit with a little bit of pale skin stretched over it.
Yeah, it sort of makes the people of St. John's, New Brunswick not seem so bad.
With their mottled, roomy skin.
Right.
Here's an inaccurate description of a smile, I would say. She half smiled at my words, but one side of her mouth refused to turn up. So let's do the math on that. Isn't that a quarter smile then?
Right.
Half smile with only one side of your mouth turning halfway up.
Yeah, and that's very hard to do. Like, I can imagine the half smile. I got dentist work on Monday and I was sort of doing the Dick Cheney smile for the rest of the day. But a quarter is really hard.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone, Dick Cheney, yes. Interesting.
Well, this is just sort of you. I questioned his whole awareness, because if there's anything that's been sort of drilled home over this entire book, it's that she's unable to, you know, brush her hair without inflicting like major wounds on herself because she's the world's biggest klutz. But she's very nervous about him imposing a 5-mile hike on her. And it's, we don't know whether that's 5 miles one way in and 5 miles out, or whether 5 miles round trip. But regardless, it's a, you know, that's a sizable amount of miles for anyone to spring on you unexpectedly.
Yeah, yeah, that's something you should say up front. What level is this hike? Yeah.
What shoes should I wear, et cetera. But he says, "What's wrong?" I asked. Her voice was low and nearly inflectionless as she answered, "I'm not a good hiker. You'll have to be very patient." I didn't believe her entirely, but it was a kind lie. You don't believe this? Like, she's been Mr. Magoo throughout the entire book. She's injured people playing badminton.
I mean, yes, Jerry Lewis can go through a quarter of a movie without doing the things that she does. Like, she can't open a door.
Right.
She hits herself in the face with a badminton racket, which, you know, if you did it in the Jerry Lewis movie, you're like, let's wait for that kind of stuff until, you know, act
yes,
two.
Yes, exactly. but they're hiking. It says, mostly she kept her eyes down, not as if she were avoiding looking at me, but as if she didn't trust the ground. I saw her glare at a few roots as she stepped over them and made the connection then. Surely a clumsy person would be nervous about the uneven terrain. So he's just, you know, again, a titanic dumbass. He did not realize that a bushwhack 5 miles to the meadow was going to cause the world's biggest lack of equilibrium person to have some issues.
He's also, once again, we get into this maddening loop of him trying to figure out her mood. She's looking around and she's like, she's angry, but she's also, there's some secret pool of grief or something. It's just like, God, well, shut up. She's just a dumbass kid. Why are you guessing so much?
Yeah.
But it goes on forever. It's like, why would she have this feeling? Is where, you know, presumably he might go into the woods and, you know, rip her throat open or whatever.
Right.
She might just be nervous about that, whatever. But just the dwelling on it, like, God, shut up.
Yeah, and the way that they pass the time is, like, again, I just wrote, I cannot believe we are still doing this as we've hit the halfway mark of this massive tome. But he grills her on her favorite birthday, her favorite grade school teacher. He gets to the big question of dogs or cats, to which she answers, I'm not really sure, maybe cats. So it is just the worst conversation imaginable as they march towards her potential death.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, my God.
He should have done that. But I will also point out, I'm just not noting them anymore. Clenched jaws and chewed lips galore in this chapter. Mm-hmm. Just
okay.
Everywhere. So someone wants to tally them, feel free. I do not.
Yeah. He's sort of like... He needs to give himself some credit, because as we've seen, like, he's constantly reading people's thoughts, and the girls are like, he's a male model. He's so hot. Like, I would literally kill for him. And then he's thinking, I knew this emotion. Stage fright was the closest term I could come up with, was truly ridiculous. So what if Bettel found me repulsive? If she rejected me in disgust? So it's like, now he is doing the, you know, you think I'm pretty? No one's ever told me I'm pretty before. So we have just both our main characters are doing that to each other.
Yeah, his dumbassery cannot be excused at this point. Like, you know, he describes it constantly about how people are, it's part of his being a vampire that he is attractive to people. It's built in, right? He even says it later in this reading. Like, you're attracted to me because that's what I am. That's how I trap people in. Like, I'm a spider, you know, and you're a fly.
Right.
And that's how it works.
That's why people write their phone numbers in marinara sauce on that
right.
Pie pasta.
I'm a candle. You're a moth. That's how it works. Oh, does she like me?
Yes. Bella would see me and be all the things she should have seen from the beginning. Terrified, disgusted, appalled, repelled, and done with me. I couldn't bear the first reaction on her face. I just, even at your, like, most insecure in middle school, or, like, you know, your first dance in high school, it's like, I didn't think it was going to go that bad.
He should have brought a Brunswickian with him, like, in comparison. Right. Hey,
Yeah. Hey, Igor, come into the meadow. Right? This could be worse, right? I didn't know. I didn't know this. That's why you wanted me here. Am I really that bad?
By the way, after the dog and cat thing, she tells about how she killed a bunch of her goldfish. So,
oh, right, yes.
I loved how we wasted time on that. Like the grade school goldfish tragedy becomes like, would you
three
just
different
get on
goldfish,
with the
sparkling? Right? Yes.
What the hell does this mean? I had the oddest desire to wait on her hand and foot in some socially acceptable way, to show Bella that her merely existing was more than enough.
Ugh.
So he wants to become like Jeeves to her? Or?
Yeah, the...
Good morning, madam. The eggs are
Cinderella's
on the side
bowl. Like the mice that turn into her footmen on her coach.
I mean, is that socially acceptable?
What? I guess the servitude might not be socially acceptable. It could be, you know, that guy who used to hold the umbrella for P. Diddy everywhere he went.
Well, yeah, I guess. But look, if he just started doing it, I mean, Charlie's not going to notice, you know, idiot.
I noticed. Who is this guy?
Edward, live here now?
Yes, we've been married for 3 years, Dad. You gave a toast at the wedding that was surprisingly eloquent.
Why he rubbed lotion in your feet? He's waiting on me in a socially acceptable way, Charlie. Pay attention.
Fishing license.
Sports recap. That's all I have for that.
Yeah, it sort of ends with like she's like walks into the meadow and he sort of takes a deep breath and steps out into the sunlight, which again, I don't understand why they couldn't wait for it to just, you know, sun to come out at his house, but... this is sort of the hole we've dug ourselves for with the Twilight lore, so here we are.
And then put yourself in my position of reading this last night as I come to, the final chapter. So I'm going to knock this off in about 15, 20 minutes.
Right, yeah. You're like, well, you know, the Twins game has started, but I'll get this done and you know, I'll be tuned in by the bottom of the second inning, perhaps.
No, indeed. Here we go. All that said, I don't have a lot of, I mean, I have notes for it, but I don't have a ton because the length does not mean there's any more, there's not much more to dive into.
Oh,
it's an incredible repetition. Incredible.
Incredible. Yeah. At some point in time, he recaps the book. He like recaps the history of their relationship to her in this meadow, which, you know, that's potential like... witness material for The Hague at this point in time to pad out this book any further, I think is, you know, internationally illegal.
Yes. Blasting his description at, you know, a compound would be completely it might be outside the bounds of ethical behavior.
Yeah, really. But, you know, we don't have a choice. We've got to sort of sludge through it, so might as well do it. The first thing I notice is that there's one use of the word sparks, but we never get a sparkly. I don't know if this is something that's been maybe from Bella's point of view we got that, or if maybe that was just imposed by the fans and or us. But it says here that mirrored in her eyes, what I resembled most was a man on fire. And then later, I could see the effects of the light refracting off my skin, shining prism-like against her own. And later he says, rainbow sparks dancing across her face as the light moved back and forth across my skin. So it not a good description, I don't think. Sparkly would have cut to the chase much better.
Well, I wondered about this. Do you think that it was kind of like we all know what, I don't know, the atomic bomb, the first atomic bomb looks like or something. And so she's just, it's obviously, we all have right. That mental picture. So I'm going to do this heroic retelling of it, you know, because you can all see it, but here's different ways to say it.
Sure.
And let the fans just go, oh, he's sparkling now. This is so much fun. I think that's what she was trying to do.
I guess so. Yeah. It's waiting for a character to do their catchphrase, but, it doesn't seem to me like the worrying that he was going to come across like a new Brunswickian seems like, yeah, again, protesting too much in advance when all you get is sort of like rainbow from a prism.
This is a great description of her, though. She's, I think, fully a cartoon character. Her expression shifted as she approached. Her head cocked to the side and her eyes first narrowed, then grew huge. So I pictured like French Stewart to Zoe Deschanel.
Right.
Eyes narrowed. And then
Bush baby.
As her the heart, you know, bounces out of her chest and she hits herself on the head with a shoe.
There we go. Cartoon wolf again.
But yeah, she says, I've never seen anything more beautiful. I've never imagined something so beautiful could exist. And he still is, he's like, but it is very strange though. You aren't repulsed by my flagrant lack of humanity. So it's, again, it's like, the girl in Ready Player One who was like, you know, had the, minor birthmark and like pretty much again, lived like the elephant man because she was so worried that people were going to think she was a freak and, bring pitchforks to her house if they ever saw her on her actual stream.
Right, so when she was watching, you know, like a stuntman show or something where they do the ultimate thing is the fire, right? Put your suit on, douse yourself mm-hmm. with gel ignite or whatever, and light yourself on fire. She's like, oh my God, you're so beautiful. I just want to touch you.
Or like the guys that would come out on like Letterman and they would have the suit where they would like run the buzzsaw on it and like just make the sparks flying like that.
Yeah. Oh, but the way they approach each other at this point with the but you don't and I don't know you, but how about this? It's just like, oh God, are we still doing this about everything that happens in this book? Like if he goes to eat a sandwich later, will it be like, do you want to eat the sandwich? I don't know, maybe. I looked at her wondering if she thought I should have rye instead of whole wheat. It's just stop torturing yourself over everything. Describe it and move on.
She sort of sucks in some air as he reaches for the Miracle Whip and he agonizes over whether that meant she was excited or disgusted by it for three whole pages.
What are you thinking? I'm thinking about guar gum because I just read the label down deep into the mayonnaise.
Yeah. But like it keeps going. So like he needs to, essentially he's just like repressing his urge to eat her. But he is going to just try to sort of like, get acclimated to her scent and her blood in the thing. And he does this by listening to her heartbeat. He sort of just like, he moves in, like, you know, puts his nose against her ear and is like, this is the best way for me to do this. But he says, 2,364 of her heartbeats later, I felt more in control than I had in many days. So did you do the quick math on that?
I did not do it. At that point, I was too frustrated.
Take a healthy girl's pulse. They have just walked 5 miles, but you know she's sitting down again. So let's say 70.
70, that means that he's, yep, fair enough.
He's sat there breathing at her for 33 minutes.
Yeah.
Which, to get ahead of it, Cynthia, a listener, wrote in, this reaches new levels of unrealistic pauses that Tech War and Sir Nathaniel from Lair of the White Worm can only dream of. And, you know, the needless specificity, one of our favorite things, has once again reared its head.
Well, during that time, she sat there getting a strategy for opening the bolt of her door. So it was not time wasted.
Right.
Here's the chapter. I'm just pulling this out at random. I didn't even write this down as a note. I'm going to read it and then repeat this literally 6,000 times. Now I let it fill my mind, invade my system, attack my controls, the gushing and throbbing of it, the pounding and sloshing, the surge through the biggest arteries, the ripple through the smallest vein, the heat of it, the heat that washed in waves across my exposed skin, the taste of it burning on my tongue and aching in my throat. Repeat 4,000 times, and that's this chapter.
Yes, absolutely.
Touching her, feeling the warmth, the softness, the gushing, the pulsing. Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess that's what he's actually feeling. But, you could say a lot more with fewer words, I feel like. On that same note, why don't you be the editor here and you let me know where you would have cut me off during this description?
Okay.
First, so he's still trying to just sort of, this is essentially him like, you know, he's like, you know, thinking about baseball during sex kind of thing. He's trying to, you know, hold off the inevitable. But he says, first, I gathered information. I triangulated the exact location of the birds I could hear, and then by their calls, identified each one's genus and species. I analyzed the irregular splash that revealed life in the stream, and after equating the water displaced with the size of the fish, deduced the most likely variety. categorize the nearby insects. Unlike the more developed species, insects ignored my kind as they would a stone. By the speed of their wing movements and the elevation of their flight, or the tiny clicking sounds of their legs against the soil.
I'm going to stop you there.
Stephanie,
this is good stuff. I love where you're going with this.
Do you want to know how many insects were in the meadow?
I have a suggestion for you.
Okay.
I think
there are 4,913
insects. To improve
this,
how about this? As I continued to classify, I added calculation. If there were currently 4,913 insects in the area of the meadow, which was roughly 11,035 square feet, how many insects on average would exist in the 1,400 square miles of the Olympic National Park?
That's a great question.
What if insect populations dropped 1% for each 10 feet of elevation? And I'm just going to put an aside here.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that, Stephanie?
I'm writing it down now. What if
insect populations dropped 1% for each 10 feet of elevation?
This is what a 104-year-old horny vampire would be thinking about.
Yes.
We're on the same wavelength.
I love this. Such a great partnership.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me get my pen out, and I'm just writing more next to this.
More insect material. Yes, that is. That's not where I expected that to go. But it's good that they were sympathetic with her editor.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
If that had been a fanfic, I would have, 100% fanficked. Like, that's just utterly insane.
Yep. So he's locked his body in place with completely still, right? He's acting like a vampire now. They don't need to move. He has to pretend to move. So
yeah, he says, this is the first time she's seeing this effort of mine.
So that's the action going on, is his body locked in place, thinking about insect populations four paragraphs on end.
At the halfway mark of the 750-page book. And he goes on. He gets even weirder with these thoughts he's thinking. He says, concurrently, so this is at the same time as he's calculating insect populations, I thought through the songs I'd heard most rarely in my century of life. So it's like, dividing by zero. What is the song you've heard most rarely in your life? What the hell does that even, how could you,
stand in the corner and try not to think of an elephant, I guess.
Right. But one hit wonder by a band that they were trying to break on, the radio in 1990 that I, sort of walked by my sister's room when she was listening to it.
That's what he says. He says he's walking past people humming things, and he remembers it all.
Yeah. He says that later, why must I be blessed with perfect recall? And I'm like, that's a good question, because it's not something that most vampires are known for having.
Right. Yeah. No, I was reminded of there's a story about Rimsky-Korsakov or something as a kid was in the other room while some of the great Russian composers were in the outer room showing each other their new pieces. And then years later, he met one of the old lions and he played the piece that he'd heard from the other room note perfectly. So that's Edward.
Vampire!
Only it's with things like, da 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 da, you're going to put my army man over here. Oh, no, here comes a tank. Tank is coming. He's going to get you. And that's what Edward's thinking about.
That was the only cute boy in New Brunswick. all right. Well, here's a challenge for you. I'm gonna make up something on the fly, and you tell me what is a more romantic term. I would say just more romantic, teenage love. Okay.
Okay.
So here's the first one. I glanced over and caught the faintest glimpse of her lace bra strap through her shoulder. She blushed as she saw me turn away and pulled it back up. But I can tell that we both were suppressing a secret thrill at this sight on this hot summer day that we knew would last forever in our minds.
I have to make that more romantic?
No. Think about the teenage experience. Does that more capture the teenage experience of just summer love, or does this next thing I'm about to read?
Okay.
Her heart throbbed wetly just a foot from my ear.
Oh, dumb sentence of the week.
Oh, man.
Wetly.
Yeah. It just takes it into just, you know, weird internet, like, fetish territory with that one word.
I feel like that is a word that could be used by Pappy, like, you know.
Yeah.
The gargoyle next to me bit into her French dip. It squished wetly.
Yeah, you know, Stephen King, that's his famous advice, is like, you know, adverbs are not your friend. And I've always been like, okay, settle down. Sure, like, you know, it's not like you have to eliminate them entirely. But after this, I agree. Like, adverbs should be stricken from the record. It should be a yet another crime that The Hague tried to use one like that.
That's pretty pretentious of Stephen King to be slamming people's prose, Mr. Cartoon sound effects every three paragraphs. Boing went his, you know.
he does use turns of phrases that, like, you've only heard, like, you know, gym teachers in movies use, you know. Well, you know, if a rock falls on your pecker, you got to make sure that rock ain't there anymore. Like, that sort of, you know, it's like a character just says that as a vampire's, you know, attacking their town.
Yes, that is his way of giving character to, especially like the old crusty nor'easters, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Uh-huh. But speaking of Pappy, I don't think I sent it to you, but on John Oliver's TV show this week, he was doing a thing where he was like, all right, I want everyone to go and, you know, register to vote or something like that. It was something that was going to, oh no, just fill out the census. He was like, this is going to take you 2 minutes. So here's what I'm going to do to, you know, the show is going to end, not going to end, but I'm going to put the DVD bouncing logo, you know, for the screensaver on a DVD player. I'm going to put that up. And just to make sure you don't sit around and wait to watch that, I'm going to play an excerpt from Sean Penn's audiobook of Bob Honey, Who Just Do Stuff.
Wow.
To physically drive you from the room in order to go fill out the census.
Wow.
And like it was, you know, it had some commentary pop up on the screen because Pappy did a voice when he like, I was telling Lauren, I was like, I don't recognize this part of the book. But then he went in and he was like, he was in the diner and he's like, what's with the rate of incest in your area? It was that type of book. It was that part of the book.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So I was pleased to see it out there.
Some airtime for Pappy. Yeah. No, yeah. That's great. Now, returning to the pros here, the reason we had to, well, look, we had the insect thing. I'm glad that was in there. We needed that. But why do we need to return to this? Tell me what you're thinking. I said the words gently, but could she hear that I was begging? It's still so strange for me, not knowing. Again, it's like Macbeth stopping and striding middle of the stage. Boy, I sure did kill that king, didn't I? Things are going poorly for me now.
Yes.
Because I gave in to my evil desires. Boy, my wife sure shouldn't have talked me into... I mean, what are we doing?
Right, yes. You know, yeah, the penny for your thoughts is pretty much his only move.
I used to think my move when I was in the theater was I always kept mints with me, and then I'd see a girl I liked, and I'd go, mint? And that was just my move. Like, that's
you're
the
in?
Way, yeah, you're in. You're talking now, so.
Then you'd be hearing her wet, throbbing heart within seconds.
Right. What are you thinking? I'm thinking this weird mint guy needs to get the hell away from me, is what
you
think.
Well... I don't want to put you on the spot here, but you offline to me, you're always saying this. You're always saying that Edward is just like a rooted flytrap.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I call you out, but buckle up because there's a revelation coming up. He says, "What was the point of my charms and lures? I was no rooted flytrap waiting for prey to land inside my mouth."
What? He's not a rooted flytrap?
It rocks you back on your heels, doesn't it?
That was every time I would be confused about his motivations, I would look over at the banner on my wall that said, "Remember, Edward is a rooted flytrap," and that explained his behavior. Oh boy,
is that a term like a Venus flytrap? Is that, you know, is that more Washington State slang?
I don't know. The rooted flytrap?
I guess so.
Here's the second instance of the book becoming self-aware. I actually winked at her. One would think I was 13 instead of 104. Yep, we've all been thinking that for quite some time.
We have. Oh man, yeah, I noted that as well. But that's during his. So he's hulking out, right? She leaned in too close, and the venom sort of took over. The monster made its final sort of attempt at rearing its head.
And he did that thing that vampires are very well known for. Go ahead and describe that.
He runs up over to some trees, uproots them, and then throws them at other trees.
Right. A vampire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just part of the whole Vlad the Impaler myth.
And then he wonders whether or not the tree will survive, and he's going to come back and check on it. You know, like vampires do.
Well, he probably was worried about had he displaced one of the 4,913 insect populations. You know, was that a spruce tree that the bark beetles need to survive? Like that's got to weigh on your conscience.
True, and unfortunately, right underneath it was the last mountain lion in Washington State. So he got hit by the branch, and that was the end of that.
I was reminded there's a sketch on Saturday Night Live where a guy. Does a like fake hidden camera thing where he tells Chris Farley that the coffee he just ate was actually Folgers crystals or something, and Chris Farley just develops into like wrecking the whole restaurant and overturning tables and bashing people over the head with plates, and that's sort of what I imagine this tree uprooting thing going like.
Right, and she's just sitting there. Right, she's just watching.
Yeah, that's that trees are exploding and. You know, her heart's throbbing wetly, but I think she's standing there like a rooted flytrap.
Again, to sort of flesh out the character of our wives as concerned this podcast. Have you ever had, one of those things where like, you know, you're trying to fix something or you're doing a computer thing and you feel like you're alone with your tantrum, but obviously your spouse can hear it. Finally does the, understated, you okay?
Right, yes.
Yeah, it's just this girl. And then, of course, the shame falls on you, like, oh, you could hear that? Okay.
The absolute apex of that did not involve Lauren, but involved my friend Greg, who used to play poker, online poker for a living 15 years ago. And he was living with our other friend Jake, because this was right out of college. And Jake sort of had come back to their house, and it was a ground floor apartment that had a glass door to the patio.
Oh, yeah.
Sliding glass door. That's how you'd enter. And Jake was, had his hand on the door about to enter, but then witnessed Greg take a bad beat in poker. So probably, lost his rent for the month or something. Stand up, take his shirt off, and then pick up a chair and just start like shaking the chair. And in my mind, he's still shaking the chair as he turns around and sees Jake standing at the door, looking in through him and, lowers it to the ground slowly, embarrassed. And But yeah, that's Edward's putting the tree back into its root hole, smoothing the dirt around it again.
I think it'll be okay. Just snap the middle part. Got any glue on you? Yep. I'm going to see if you can not laugh at this. This is one of Bella's jokes here.
Okay. Oh, good. Let's lighten the mood.
To lighten the mood, to de-escalate. He says it was successful. So here you go. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
So what you're saying is I'm your brand of heroin. Okay. Ooh. Ooh, a bit of a hang. Yeah. It's a thinker. It is a thinker. So yeah.
You know, the first human I ever met was a heroin addict. Yeah, it was a tragic life story. His mother wept at his funeral.
His blood was bitter, but it wasn't ditch water. Yeah, tell you that.
Fun. He compares. He's trying to tell her what her blood would be like, and he transitions from ice cream to brandy to heroin, in the effort to make a comparison.
Which he says over and over again. I'm trying to find the best thing. And each one misses the mark by a long chalk. So it's like, you're not very bright, are you? You had 109 years to think about this. Like, what is it? What could I compare it with if I ever had to compare my thirst for blood? And the first thing he comes up with is like, well, it's like if you're going to choose a Mallow bar or a Charleston Chew. No, that's right. Not good.
Yes. He's going with that 1919 candy that from your great-grandfather would have eaten.
A Mary Jane or a...
it does. He sort of... This was the part where he, I thought, got more emo than Ebony Darkness Raven Dementia Way even did.
Oh, strong words.
strong, but I believe accurate. He says maybe this is like how he would not have, if he had never met her or never seen her that first day, I would have ached, certainly, and then gone about my empty half-life, never realizing how much I had lost, never knowing actual happiness. It would have been easier to lose her then, I knew, just as I would have never had known joy. I wouldn't have suffered the depths of pain I now knew to exist.
The Cure is playing in the background. Yeah. Oh, boy.
And for all that, I concluded, oh, no, this is a different thing. This is not the emo, but... I would like to keep going if that's okay.
Please do.
And for all, this is in quotes, and for all that, comma, I concluded my long confession, comma, I'd have fared better if I had exposed us all that first moment, comma, than if now, comma, here, M dash, with no witnesses and nothing to stop me, M dash, I were to hurt you. End of quote.
Oh, God.
Her eyes widened, not in fear or surprise, but in awe of my run-on sentence, I think was how that was supposed to end.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough sentence to land in real time. Like, he said that. He didn't think it or, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess just he's, you know, if you keep running on, that will suppress your urge to uproot trees and throw them at other trees.
Right. Well, he gets to the heart of the matter, so to speak, the throbbing, wetly heart of the matter, is that he and his family have killed in mm-hmm. the past. Emmett just took down a couple.
Yep.
And so, you know, when you, when your mom says, "Don't you dare touch those Hershey Kisses," because I'm going to make those special peanut butter cookies with the Hershey mm-hmm. Kiss in the middle later, so don't touch them. And then Emmett tears the whole bag open and and eats all the Hershey's Kisses. Of course, Esme and Carlisle they're upset with him. And so they say, "Listen, young man, you're going to go to those people's funerals that you killed.
Yes,
you're right. You're going to put on your scratchy wool-collared suit, and you're going to stand there and pay your respects to the people you murdered."
Right, yeah. And, you know, and, yeah, I understand that our presence is very off-putting to lots of people, and they're creeped out, and they can sense that something's wrong just from the moment we walk in the door, and even more so because they don't know who we are, and we're showing up at their funeral unannounced, but this is the only way to make this right.
Yes. It makes it far worse for the survivors. There's actually evil around what they consider a holy ritual, but you're going to do it, young man.
Their dog's hackles will rise, and, you know, he will bark at the wall, but...
Those giant, gross centipedes will, like, squirm and make those noises as they squeeze out of the walls of the church, and the crow up in the bell tower will start cawing, but stay there and then eat a ham bun with the people and meet Uncle Leonard afterwards.
Right, yeah, and then send him your allowance in the mail, too, because we're paying them off as well.
Wow, that just, but that's...
Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah.
But again, like, you know, give us that moment instead of meeting the, you know, super feminine woman in New Brunswick.
Right.
And or this moment, which we get a lengthy recap of, him and Carlisle popping into a Quaker church in Pennsylvania.
Oh, I have the description. This is great.
Okay.
So in your mind, picture a Quaker meeting house. All right.
Yeah, sure.
On one such diversion, we found an old Quaker meeting house around 30 miles north of Philadelphia. It was a small building, no bigger than a farmhouse, with a stone exterior and a very Spartan arrangement inside.
What?
So you were picturing tons of stained glass and, like, stone pillars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gilded candle holders. And,
yes. Angels.
Tapestries and, of, you know,
right,
gold,
yes,
thread.
No, this was that rare Quaker meeting house that was kind of Spartan. So.
God, man. Yeah. Spruce up your digs, Quakers. But I like this, too. Carlisle goes to admire a painting. It was quite a small painting, no more than 15 inches square. I guess that it was older than the stone church had housed it. The artist was clearly untrained, his style amateurish. And if they flashed back in the movie, it would clearly be the same actor as playing Charlie, but as his, like, great-grandfather, being like, "I'm painting now! This is what I..."
I pictured it was the... Napoleon Dynamite sketch of the Liger or something, or the remember when he drew the picture of the girl and asked her to prom? And
no.
she turns it, oh, it's one of the best moments ever. She turns it over and it's just this repulsive, like overshaded picture of herself. And his voice comes in and voiceover is like, there's more of this if you go to prom with me. Oh, a big laugh.
I was imagining the Ecce Homo fresco.
Yes.
That the nun had retouched.
Here's a sentence.
Clearly untrained. It's amateur. Yes.
Here's a sentence I just had to call out. To me, it was like you were some kind of demon summoned straight from my own personal hell to ruin me. Ah, my wedding vows. That's what he said when he first met her. That was what was going on in those bio classes while they're watching Lorenzo's Oil.
Right, yeah. He's tormented by an actual demon that's making him kill the rest of the class in 5 seconds.
Right. Sonic challenge for you.
Okay.
Ha, I snorted.
Sorry, no, wait. Let me try again.
Okay.
Sorry, let me... Ha!
I mean, don't... Your sinuses remain inside your nose. I
mean, that was a tough one.
Well done.
Sorry, yeah. I think ha was also his reaction during the last one where he had some existential revelation or something like that, or a fear that she would die and he would be forever immortal, cursed to wander the earth with despair no man has ever known till the end of time. And I think he said, huh.
Nice. So again, there's one of these moments in here where, remember earlier he said, well, I'll just be able to handle this whatever, living around her and not tearing her throat out. I'll be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And then he does something in here. The chapter's so long. I don't know what the moment actually is, but then he's just like, well, I'm okay now.
Yep.
He did one thing where she got too close and he pushed back and he flew like 75 feet and hit a tree. Mm-hmm. And then he spends like 17 minutes or pages at least walking back towards her like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hearts are beating wetly the whole time. But then something happens and he just goes, oh, okay, we're good now. And I don't remember what it is. I guess he just holds her and then he doesn't want to kill her or something. So that's it.
Yeah, he says, I also saw very clearly in that moment that there was no separate monster and never had been one.
Okay.
So, go to hell, like major theme of the first 370 pages of the book.
Right.
So frustrating.
Here's, again, at this point, we've had this before through all pages before. The electricity ricocheted around on the inside of my stomach, and I wondered why humans had thought to name such a wild sensation butterflies.
Oh, yeah.
Knock it off, a-hole. You were a human once, too.
Yes.
This distinction doesn't have to be made anymore.
Yeah, it's just the Star Trek aliens of like, and you call these butterflies? Are these...
Yes. Plus, you want to be human. You're not unfamiliar with human things. Why do you humans call it butterflies? we're so far past that.
This is... I jotted down this note. It is uncouth, but I'm going to read it out loud. It says, I wanted so many things. Things I had not felt any need for in my entire immortal life before I met her. Things I was sure I had not wanted before I was immortal either. And I felt that some of them, things I'd always thought impossible, might in fact be very possible. So can he get a boner or no? Where are we at here? What are we building towards? Like, it's like that's my only takeaway here.
I have a similar question. I didn't phrase it quite the same that you did. She says, or he says, knowing that it would take quite a bit of effort for her to heft even just my hand without my help, I was a little heavier than I looked.
Ooh.
And so that raised the question. So he's voluntarily going to high school. Mm-hmm. So school physicals?
Ha.
Vaccinations?
Right.
Okay, Edward, yeah. Step on the scale. You have your athletics clothes. Good. Okay, you do. Good. Step on the scale and we'll get your weight. Are they just begging off of these? Is Carlisle having to like write notes?
Yeah, he's sending in the notes, a religious exemption or something.
Right.
That he's providing his own.
Right. Yeah. It just seems like that would come up.
Yeah. A lot of things probably would have come up. I'm not sure. But yeah, like if they don't have blood, that seems to rule that out. But it also, I guess, who knows what a vaccination would do to you before you enroll in the school? Interact with your venom?
I think you have to, show proof of vaccination at some point. But I guess Carlisle can fake that.
Right, exactly.
Were you, at your age, did you shower at school after P.E.?
No, I think it was probably an option, but like, I don't think I ever did. It was certainly not enforced. And so it was like, well, I'm not going to do that then.
Oh, okay. So that was just like mandatory for us back in the, it was a small town. I went to high school with, the towel snapping and everything. I just imagined Edward in that situation, in the shower, like somebody steps in with a rat tail, as you call them, and snaps Edward's weenie, and it snaps off because it's made of stone. Edward's weenie snapped off.
It's circling the drain. Oh.
All right. Well, I think that's all I got.
Well, yeah. I mean, so this was, she says... he says, there are other hungers, I continued, hungers I don't even understand that are foreign to me. So again, more of this, what is this feeling to you? She gave me that slightly skeptical look again. I may understand that better than you think. I'm not used to feeling so human, I admit it. It is always like this. So they're pretty much discussing their mutual horniness there. And then they sit like that for long enough that he gets this thought. We'd been here a long time. Though now it seemed like mere seconds. She would have human need she was neglecting. So is he like, is he listening to the like progression of her breakfast burrito, like move sort of through her innards as he's, as he's lying there listening to her heart throb wetly. And he realizes that, in half an hour, she's going to need to wreck Charlie's can. Like,
I'm sure he's got to be aware of all of that stuff, right? He's minutely aware of her pulse, and it's like I said when I went into that the quietest room in the world, an anechoic chamber, and we sat there for like half an hour, and there was I think four or five guys. You could hear the food digesting in people's stomachs. You could hear your own blood beating. So yeah, that's got to be bothersome.
Yeah, it might detract from the moment.
Especially if he knows like which bend of her intestines the bubble of food is currently going around. Like, oh, it just made lap number one. Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is going to be a three flusher. Oh, wow. I'm glad your skin isn't that translucent.
Ugh. But I just didn't take notes on it. But we should point out he does take her on the Benny Hill ride in this chapter.
Yep. Yeah.
And she gets immediately sick, which
is sort of miscalculated,
which is not very romantic, but, I just didn't have a lot of notes for it, but there's a lot left here. I just kind of,
he straps her on. He says, hold on little spider monkey and runs with her into the car. And she's like, she gets off and is like, I'm going to puke essentially. It's like, oh, right. I can run to Seattle at, in less than an hour. I guess that's probably going to be a hard experience for you.
Wasn't there a time at which she should have said, hey.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I'm starting to get a little queasy here.
Yeah, but for someone who all he does is worry about her hurting herself, it does seem like a bit of a miscalculation.
When I was a kid, I used to be able to ride on, any ride. We used to go to Six Flags, St. Louis, and ride everything, and the thing that just like spins you around and the floor drops out, and then you sort of turn, you're just
gravitron,
plastered against the wall by centrifugal force, and a guy just started chatting up a woman on one of those, and it went for about 12 minutes. So at minute 9, I was just like, wow, I've never felt this before, but I am going to get sick. And I got off and got sick, and climbed back on the next thing and was like, well, seems like I'm ruined for life. Tried it a couple years later, got immediately sick.
A different ride?
Yeah, I'm done for, I can't go on one.
Wow.
But a few years ago, I went on one of those virtual roller coasters. you know, that are just stationary, but they're on the hydraulic things.
Like Star Tours. And
I got out of that. And for about 3 days, I had vertigo and could not. I'd start sweating just in the middle of the day.
Wow, a switch flipped.
Yeah, it just is
gone. It's like gaining a reverse superpower.
Yeah, so he may have just ruined Bella for life, I'm saying. she could be done. He can never do the Benny Hill run again.
Right. But his reaction, this is my last note, is she says, you know, like, you know, give me a minute. She looks green. She's going to barf. And so then is when they opt to go in for their first kiss. So they smooch and he does, you know, the final, you know, human thing of this. What strange alchemy was this that the touch of lips should be so much more than the touch of fingers? It made no logical sense that simple contact between this specific area of skin should be so much more powerful than anything I'd yet experienced. And again, like, you know, not to demean anything, but you were 17. Like, odds were in your favor that you're going to have, you know, smooched somebody or come close to that before, or at least understood this basic, you know, this basic thing that everyone had that by that age is sort of like, oh yeah, got it. Like, I've seen people do it, understand that that's a thing.
Right.
You haven't just landed on the planet.
Yes. And this is it's so on the nose to the cliche about the Star Trek alien women. What is kiss? You know, and then Kirk leans in with his eye light on and, you know, the fogged lens and gives her the kiss. I understand now.
Oh, God.
Oh, so there we go. The longest chapter, I think, by far that we've ever done.
It's possible, yeah. It definitely has that Shadow Moon feel to it where it's like, you understand that chapters exist. Use them. They're a tool in your toolbox. So I don't know if the word count makes those books longer. I'm certainly not going to open up that book ever again, so we will never know.
Well, I have the digital edition, so I may just do a little comparison of word counts.
Okay.
Because this one is just, this is a stunner. I mean,
I'm sorry it snuck up on you. That was I have the full book, the print book, so I saw that there was still 50 pages left by the time we got there.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, the analog, you get the idea of where you are in the thing, and you know, here you're just looking at page by page. I gotta learn to scroll ahead or it's gonna bite me.
Anyway, so with that level of enthusiasm, let's move into our dumb sentence of the week.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence ends with a period or an exclamation or a
Well, dumb sentences, I submit the chapter we just finished in whole and total as my dumb sentence of the as the week. But no, there's lots of them, so let's go through them.
This one is from Andrew. It refers to Edward's attempt at playing badminton. He says, referring to the shuttlecock, it flew better than it would have had my attention been focused. And he wondered, he did better at badminton than he would have if he'd been paying attention? Don't know how that works. Philip submitted, I let myself get lost in the rhythms of her body, let the sound and the warmth and the smell co-mingle. And he said, I think I might have figured out one of the reasons Edward holds such disdain for humans. A vampire's keen senses wouldn't just hear breathing and heart rate. They would constantly, hear us digesting. The school cafeteria would be a disgusting soundscape of squishy guts churning endlessly. And he says, also, this is fascinating, a vampire that eats until it's bloated, as Edward has done several times, would be urinating like crazy, most likely while feeding. Vampire bats mostly need red blood cells and will pee while eating to avoid being bloated. And I wrote back, I was like, is this true? And, I mean, I don't know who Philip is or if he's trolling us, but he assured me that that is a true fact about vampire bats.
I believe that is true of all like the insects too. Bed bugs, I believe, sit there and drink your blood and crap on your face, you know, piss, crap, whatever you want to say. Sorry for the language.
Amazing. Well, this one is from Janelle. My first thought as I landed crouched in the shadows of the trees were her hands, and relief washed over me when I saw that they were still attached to her wrists. She said, that's always my first thought when I do my tree crouching. Jim and Harris both submitted the only this is like about her preparing for her hair. The only explanation I could think of was that she wanted her hair to look nice. And as the person she planned to see tomorrow was me, that meant she must have wanted it to look nice for me. So that is the logic airtight of a 104-year-old vampire.
I believe that is direct from the Socratian dialogues there, yes.
Amanda submitted, my heart throbbed wetly just a foot from my ear. Paige submitted, I stayed completely motionless, feeling her eyes touch my skin as she moved out of sight. And he said, just, ew, feeling her eyes touch my skin. She was grossed out by that. Gina submitted, this is referring to Bella's blood, the gushing and throbbing of it, the pounding and sloshing. That's the good stuff. Heather submitted, of course, she would have human need she was neglecting. Emily submitted, 2,364 of her heartbeats later, I felt more in control than I had in many days. Mike submitted this one. This is in reference to Edward trying to hide his obligation not to hide his sparkly skin. It would be a lie of omission. And Mike said, this is from the character who early in the chapter dodged the question about how he'd spent his night. It's probably a bigger sin of omission to not respond. I snuck into your room and watched you like I do every night. Cynthia submitted, so without a word, he now led Esme to the large window we often used as an exit. And I completely missed this, but she said, how could vampires drop this bit of intriguing explanation that vampires have something against doors with no further explanation?
Oh, wow. I hope that comes up.
Lucas submitted, a gasp of relief choked through my lips when the horror of removed, when the horror was removed. So he's just, he probably wanted a sonic challenge for that, but I think I've exhausted my vocal cords today. And last one is from Hayden. I tried to read their sequences. I think this is the thoughts of his family members. I tried to read their sequences, hoping for a picture or even letters. E-D-W-A-R-D-P-L-E-A-S-E-G-O-A-W-A-Y, but I could find no meaning in them. And they said, this is the first sentence I've ever read that I thought was dumb simply for being ugly to look at, because those letters are all spelled out with dashes in between them and in all caps. What do you got?
Well, I have, yeah, some of them were burned, of course. Wetley is a good, would be a good nickname for like your the kid in school. Shut up, Wetley.
I was thinking a butler.
Oh.
Wetley. My paper, please.
Oh, yeah, both work. Well, I have two. I'm going to do the first one because the second one's kind of a sonic challenge. Automatically, my lips pulled back over my teeth. So, you just picture that like horrible, terrible grin, fake grin.
Yeah. As a Iron Man noises play in the background.
And this one is, first I'll just read it and then I'll do a sonic challenge. Or was it my kissing expertise I laughed out loud? So I'm going to back up from the mic.
Okay.
Or was it my kissing expertise?
My God, he's lost it.
Yeah, so those are mine. What's yours?
I have Edward saying, are you disparaging our fine state's cougars? In reference to the athletic department at either Washington State or UW, I think. And then you have, not referring to Bella's mom and her younger minor league baseball playing boyfriend. And then the second one was, I shuddered internally at the thought of the purpose behind my wardrobe and what it portended.
Wow.
Yeah. Settle the hell down. He just picked out a white t-shirt.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh, well, there it is.
Those are the dumb sentences. A lot of them provided by our just, you can't say enough fine things about how great our Patreon listeners are. They get every episode a month early. They get to listen to our Meet the Authors with Bob Fingerman. You did a classical music rundown for them based on someone's actual request a week or two ago.
Yes. Although, as I pointed out, I sort of sidestepped their request and did what I wanted. But still, it was inspired by, and I thank them for that. Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff on Patreon. I'm always grateful to see that people keep coming to the thing. So that's nice to know that we're not just putting this out into nowhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially after spending an evening reading that chapter.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap things up with a few listener emails.
We go to the bottom. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're gonna cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail.
I assume universal praise for this book.
Yeah, they're just writing in. I'm canceling my Patreon membership. I'm downloading your podcasts, printing out transcripts of them and burning them because I'm so offended. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. outside your door. Why won't you come outside so I can hurt you? Right. That side of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, the first two are on a theme. First one is from Jamie. Listening to the new episode and felt compelled to email you and say, I actually had to watch Lorenzo's Oil in 10th grade biology.
What?
Nick Nolte does an astonishing Italian accent in it.
Astonishing? A friend of mine, how?
I just can't even imagine what that would mean. I'm not even going to attempt it because I think it would probably...
That's one spicy meatball.
But Jamie said, a friend of mine had to go speak to the principal and counselor because he said to the teacher with every appearance of seriousness, if I have to hear him say desaturated fats again, I'm going to kill myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we've been schooled two podcasts in a row about the blood samples
blood
and
drawing.
Lorenzo's yeah. oil.
I guess we just didn't our high school biology days are many years beyond us. So this is pretty much someone who's my age. I too watched Lorenzo's Oil in high school biology in 1995. Paige wrote this email. I'm assuming this is something Stephanie Meyer did when she was in high school, since she's only 4 years older than me, and it came out in 93. But to think bio classes would still be showing this in 2005 is so sad. So, we are not the cosmos. We our experiences are not the universe.
Well, I mean, in defense of Lorenzo's Oil, or a defensive bio teacher showing Lorenzo's Oil, how many Hollywood movies appropriate to show in bio class come out every year? You know, it's one thing to update the Coronet school safety video every...
Sure, third version or something, yes, of Mr. Bungle.
But, there's not a lot of Lorenzo's Oils out there. What's the one with... although there's the Harrison Ford one with Brendan Fraser. That's a medical mystery, right?
A Simple Plan or something, or...
A Simple Plan is the murder, the robbery plot one.
This one was called Extraordinary Measures.
I already work around the clock.
Now, what if Harrison Ford had Nick Nolte's Italian accent?
Not gonna.
I already said I already work around the clock. this one, next email is from Matt. This is sort of on the same lines as one of your emails from earlier, your questions earlier. Started listening to the podcast a couple months ago, and I'm all caught up now. You've discovered some really wonderfully bizarre stuff on here. I'm still having trouble believing Dwight David Thrash is a real human being. As someone who's lived in the Pacific Northwest for many years, a couple things from Midnight Sun have struck out to me as strange. The repeated mentions of bears and bear attacks is especially weird. There's plenty of bears here, but they're mostly black bears, which, for bears, are relatively small. They are mostly avoid humans, and there's only 14 attacks on record in the state with one fatality. A meteor might actually be a more relevant threat to Bella. And Meyer is also correct about one thing. The Northwest Olympic Peninsula would be a fantastic place for vampires to hide. There's barely anything in that corner of the state, which makes it all the more baffling that the Cullens would decide to live in a town and attend a public high school. They're living next to hundreds of miles of empty coastline and a million-acre national park, and they've chosen to settle down in one of only three cities in the county. So maybe Matt is the person who can weigh in on the street names.
Oh, yes, please, Matt. Solve that one for me. Yeah, I mean, we've gone into that before. Is why do they need to do any of it at all?
Right, sure.
Yeah, they build a house in the middle of nowhere, and they could live like Bigfoot, right? And no one would ever see them.
Right, because I guess he is a small-town doctor, so he's helping people in that regard as opposed to the ones who have relocated to Denali, but not a big part of the plot.
Right.
Here's one from Sherry. Like me, she had dental work done recently. They asked her if she wanted to listen to headphones. I chose an old episode of 372 pages, thinking it would distract me without any problems. Bad idea. Even though I had heard it before, I still had to stop myself from bursting out laughing. While laughter is generally good, it's not a good thing to do when your mouth is full of dental tools. I forgot that 372 is like riff tracks in MST, something that gets funnier the more I listen and watch. So that's two things I can't do while listening to 372 pages: drink beverages or have dental work done. You may want to warn your listeners. So yeah, big heads up to everyone out there. I don't get your teeth drilled while doing that.
Speaking of, are you done with your dental?
Yeah. Work? Well, no, I got a crown for the first time, which is a two-phase thing. So I have to go back in 2.5 weeks to get the actual thing installed.
Oh man! And what does that entail?
The first one, it was just like it's like a bigger filling. It was a tooth that already had a filling in it, and they had to, so like there was nothing to anchor it in, so they just had to, like, it's essentially like half of a false tooth, I guess.
Giant needles or no?
Just the normal needle, but giant whatever bill. It's like a filling that costs you like 5 times what a filling costs, maybe more.
Yeah, I had not to belabor this podcast. We'll wrap it up soon. We swear.
Yeah, we got one more email.
I sat down to get my checkup, and the guy goes, you know, I could replace all these fillings. You're sitting right here. I've got the time. I'm like, well, I was always going to plan it. Yeah, wind that up. Let's do that. Replaced all my fillings and then, you know, like handed me the bill. Like, okay. I forgot this part of it. I should have asked. Right. Like, how much are we talking here? Are we talking 3 car payments?
Right.
Got it out of the way, though.
I was just thinking, like, Elon Musk, are you working on, like, a viable false teeth arrangement that people can do? Like, that seems like you'd be benefiting humanity way more than a underground loop of some sort. Like, get on that. Anyway, this last one is from Cynthia. She says, I absolutely love when you guys dive into the purchase history, review history of people who love terrible books. I did some searching on my own to better understand the type of person who would like Midnight Sun, and this one is absolutely amazing. So this is a reviewer, Jay Buke. Midnight Sun, 5 stars. And then there are excerpts. Twilight, written well. Who knew?
Wow.
So off the bat, we're up to off to no good. The next item, Becky's Guide to Raising Backyard Chickens. 5 stars. Knows her stuff. Imperial Tropical Zebra Thorn Nearite Snails. 6 count. 1 star. Died. So I guess Jay was ordering live snails off of Amazon, which sounds like a Nick Nolte scam if there was one. And then here we go. It all wraps up. It's a nice little package. Gone to the Beach sign. 5 stars. So nice. Great colors. Added a few shells to it of snails that died. Really pretty.
No.
And Cynthia says, looking forward to the next episode. So that's like a Hemingway short story right there.
Is that the brilliant satirist who gave us Raven Dementia whatever?
I take their word for it that this is real. They did not provide links, but pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, that's
all right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Man, we slam the door on this one. We bolt the thing and hope that Bella can't get it open. But no, we got to be back for the rest of this book. So, do we have a reading assignment?
No, but we'll post it in the notes. And, I don't know. I think we might have like 3 more of these left, and that should pave the way nicely to a certain book coming out, Mr. Klein.
I'm, looking, let me just scroll down to the bottom of my ebook goes to page 470. Mm-hmm. So just to, you know, and I will point out, I did scroll down to an epilogue.
Oh, yeah. That's where they talked about the prom. We had that in fanfic.
Yeah. Epilogues usually are a page. Not this baby. My God. All right. Anyway, thanks, everyone. Thanks to our Patreon
people. Thank you very
people.
Much. Definitely.
Michael J. Nelson, Connor Listoka saying so
Robbing long. Wetly for you. Bye.